Hi, and welcome to The American Male Spouse. I'm your host, Elizabeth Smith. This week, I got to talk to Courtney and hear about her work as a speech pathologist, as well as her experiences as a person with moderate to severe hearing loss herself. Courtney is an Army spouse currently living in Kansas, and she's getting ready to launch her own podcast, aiming to provide resources to families related to speech and language. And you can keep up with her on social media at HOHSpeechy. I really learned a lot from Courtney in this episode, and I hope you do too.
Hi, my name is Courtney, and I am currently working as a speech language pathologist. I have kind of had an interesting segue into the military community. I started as an undergrad volunteering for the USO at Fort Riley and was kind of always on the fringes of the military community in that capacity. And then right before I was supposed to graduate with my undergraduate degree, I met my husband, who is active duty Army, and that kind of just shaped me into getting further into the military community. And, you know, even though I'd been around military for, it's been 7-8 years now, I'm just a new spouse. So we just got married in August. So I'm still learning a lot about how military functions just as a spouse. And it's been a really great learning experience for me so far.
Awesome. Well, first of all, congratulations. You said just this past August, like 2020. Were you?
Yeah, being a COVID bride was definitely an experience.
No doubt. Did you end up getting to have a ceremony and stuff, or did you? I know some people did the legal marriage and then are holding off on a ceremony. I know there's a million different ways that people have tried to make it work in this crazy year.
Oh yeah, so we had to postpone our original date, which was good because at the time my husband ended up being quarantined due to work when our original date would have been. And then we were able to have an actual ceremony, had required like an ETP, didn't know until a week before that it was going to happen.
Wow.
Just waiting on the Army to let us know that things were going to happen. So that was definitely a lot of stress, like waiting to see if we could pull it off. And thankfully everyone was safe and we didn't have any COVID issues, but it was a lot of, you know, do we cancel it and postpone it again, or do we just try to keep pushing through? So thankfully we were able to have an actual ceremony.
Well, I'm glad that all went well. I honestly can't imagine trying to do that. You said that you were at the USO at Fort Riley. Where is Fort Riley?
Yeah, Fort Riley is in Kansas, right near Manhattan, Kansas, kind of in the middle of the state. I'm from Kansas, so it was interesting for me, having lived really close to Fort Leavenworth, a base I've actually still never even been on, that it took me moving for college to get connected with the military community.
Okay, and so is your husband from Kansas as well?
He is not, actually. So we met when I was in school and he was stationed at Fort Riley. So it was just kind of a chance meeting. And then, Okay. Yeah, we stuck together even with moves and PCS and deployments and all that. So it's been a crazy couple years.
Definitely. So where are you now?
Yeah, so we are in Missouri, near Fort Leonard Wood, which is, they also call Fort Lost in the Woods, and now I know why. After getting lost on post for an hour one night, this was a couple years ago, but I definitely know why they call it Fort Lost in the Woods.
Oh my gosh. For an hour?
For an hour, but one lesson that I learned from that experience and another experience that I had similar to that at Fort Riley is the best way to learn a military base is to get lost. And then you know where everything is that you need to know.
That's fair. That's true. So what does your husband do in the Army?
So currently he is a basic training commander. So he does a lot with basic training and just, you know, works with drill sergeants and make sure things are running smoothly. And he is a chemical officer by trade, but he's kind of done a whole slew of things from all the way from being in an aviation group and to being like in an armor group. So he's been kind of all over the place, bounced around. So
Cool. I think that's definitely something that was a big learning for me. My husband's a pilot, and when he was in pilot training, different jets, there's only so many bases for a certain jet. And I remember at the time thinking that whatever jet he got, those bases were our future. And essentially that was it. And that's been so wrong because there's just, like you said, so many different routes that you can go in the military and ways that you can jump around and career changes and stuff. So I feel like if I could go back and tell myself, yes, it's a big deal, like the drop night and everything that we did, sure, it's still important, but it's not what you're doing right now has no indication on what you're going to be doing even 3 years from now. But I think that's cool. So you're not super far from your family then at this point. You said you're in Missouri, right?
No, I'm from Kansas. So I'm about 4 hours from where my parents are, which I honestly consider being really fortunate because originally we were looking at moving to Fort Carson, Colorado. So that would have been almost 10-hour drive. He's from near the West Lafayette, Indiana area. So near Purdue. So we're about 6 hours from where his parents are.
That's awesome. I went to Purdue.
Oh, okay.
So I know that.
Yeah, go Boilermakers, right?
Yes. Yes. I think that that's pretty neat that you've been able to stay relatively close to your family as you kind of get started in this military spouse life, because I know that from what I hear from people that it really is surprising the difference when you go from even, you know, long-term serious girlfriend, et cetera, that there's just all this new stuff to learn when it comes to healthcare and logistics and military IDs and, you know, just even all that little stuff. So it's nice that at least you didn't have to go too far away at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even though I consider myself having like had training wheels for the last several years of like figuring out the ins and outs of the military community, for sure, having like family close, actually, that was a big reason why I stayed. You know, I moved back home for a year while my husband was deployed. We were engaged at the time, but I had thought about moving out to Fort Carson and starting my career there. And then, you know, COVID and his deployment hit. So we decided to I just moved back home. And then once he came back and moved down here, I was able to move down here with him. So,
yeah, that makes total sense. So can you tell me a little bit about, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it HOH? Like, how are you pronouncing it for it?
Yeah, it's HOH Speechy.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about HOH Speechy and what your goals are for it and exactly what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I originally started it out as a blog, and I am a speech language pathologist or speech therapist. Also, we're also commonly known as speech therapists. And the HOH part stands for hard of hearing, because that is the medical abbreviation. And I kind of wanted to tie those two facets of my life together, being hard of hearing and being a speech language pathologist, because we work with a lot of individuals who have hearing loss, have other kinds of communication disorders. So for me, it was really important to get the message out there, you know, for others who may be living with hearing loss to not limit themselves to what they're able and capable to do, because our field is highly competitive. So to be able to get this far, like, I couldn't have done it without the support of family and others. So really, this is my way to give back to them for all the people who've helped me get to this point. And then, you know, I kind of realized this year that the blog format wasn't really working for me. You know, months had gone by and it was just kind of sitting and going through all the crazy life transitions with getting married and moving. And I have always loved to listen to podcasts and talk to people. And I learned that that was going to be a much better outlet and format for me. So really my goal and my mission is to kind of twofold. So on one hand, I really want to connect with civilians who have disabilities and, you know, parents of children who may have disabilities to provide resources, you know, being as a speech therapist and someone who's lived with a disability. But really, my other big part is just advocating for military families and helping them through their process, because, you know, it's stressful enough for a parent to get a diagnosis for their child. But when they get a diagnosis and their spouse is deployed or in training, or they're thousands of miles away from family, it can be really stressful for them, and they feel like they don't know where to turn to. So I actually Googled military speech and language resources to see if I could find anything, and I found like nothing. So that was something for me. I'm like, okay, like there needs to be some sort of resource for this. So that was a big mission for me, to try and make things a little more transparent and easily accessed for families or dependents who might have questions or need resources.
That's awesome. And I think that that's something, regardless of the specific experience, is unfortunately something that a lot of us have run into in one place or another when it comes to just wishing for more resources and wishing for someone who has been through it. So I think that's such a cool mission that you have. And I think you're going to help out a lot of people with that. Do you hope to stick pretty specifically to those that have issues with speech and hearing, or is your goal more wide reaching, or what are you hoping to accomplish in that, as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, I mean, with my training and background, I do really want to make sure, like, if someone has speech questions or regarding hearing loss, that I can help them, but also just being able to provide resources in general and be more broad and, you know, let other dependents know who may live with a disability that, you know, sometimes it can be kind of intimidating to be within the military community just because of how fast paced it is. You know, everyone's, you know, fairly, a lot of big percentage of the military, you know, fully able-bodied individuals who are, you know, super, you know, they prize personal fitness and like have a lot of high priority on being physically fit. So I just want military spouses and their family members to feel like their voice is heard and they're included, and talking to providers as well who work with those individuals, just to be able to provide even more resources, because the military does have EFMP and it's a great program. I know it's each branch, it's a little bit different, but just to be one more resource that a parent can go to if they're on that fact-finding mission, or the dependent who would like to hear, you know, about a story that will help, you know, motivate them to do something unique and different with their disability and turn it more into an ability to make a change or do something that could be impactful.
Sure. And I think that's a really good point you make, that because of the physical requirements of most positions within the different armed services, there aren't going to be a lot of people directly in the military itself who have a lot of these experiences, because oftentimes it disqualifies them from the role. So you're right that a lot of those resources are going to come from civilians or spouses or children that are the ones that are actually directly experiencing that.
Yeah. And I actually had kind of a unique experience one time in regards to, you know, finding out more about the physical requirements with the military. I had a friend, one of my good friends one time, decided to take a recruiter out for coffee just to, you know, kind of, you know, show appreciation for them. And she wanted me to tag along because she's like, you know how to talk to military personnel and people. So she's like, all right, I'll take you along. And this guy starts drilling me with questions, a Marine, I remember distinctly, started drilling me with questions and was like, I was like, well, I have hearing loss. And he was like, oh yeah, you know, I was like, he's like, I don't know about that. You have to get a waiver. And I'm like, yeah, that's the reason why I've never really pursued. I mean, now I realize like I would have loved to be able to serve, but I, you know, even though I'm like fully functional with my using hearing aids and stuff, like that's something that automatically disqualifies people from joining. So I told him respectfully, I'm like, I wish I could, but, and I also had to joke. I was like, well, I probably wouldn't go Marines. I'd go Air Force or Army, but I think that just really made me think, like, you know, even though I can't physically serve myself, and maybe someday in the future it'll change, but I can't physically serve myself, so I may as well, like, serve those and their families who do serve in this capacity. So that kind of shifted my mindset a little bit and helped me to redefine, like, my, what I found as my mission.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like those restrictions that they currently have are reasonable, or do you feel like there are people that are restricted who could do the job to its complete capacity who are not currently able to join?
Yeah. So for me, like, one thing with hearing loss, like, for my level of hearing loss, it's moderate to severe, but I've always been fully functional pretty much with hearing aids. And, you know, I'm always like, why couldn't I just do a desk job, or, you know, mm-hmm. something that's not as demanding, like being in theater or around a lot of heavy machinery. And I also, you know, this is always a weird one to me, but there are people who have food allergies who can't serve because, you know, they can't be accommodated due to their food allergy. And yeah, there's, and also people with, like, neurotypical disorders, like people on the autism spectrum, always, you know, I'm like, there are a lot of people with these strong abilities out there, and it's unfortunate that sometimes they can't be tapped into. I understand why the military doesn't necessarily recruit those individuals or necessarily, you know, let them join, but I would in the future be, you know, it would be interesting to see if they can find a way to incorporate individuals with different abilities and different capacities, because I know, I feel like in the Israeli army, they've had individuals who are deaf. They're allowed to serve. And if I remember correctly, they have their own whole sign system, sign language system that they use with each other. So
that's really neat. I would agree that it's sort of, I understand the need for standards on a general level, but at the same time, I can see how that ends up really working to their disadvantage, because, like you said, there's a lot of perfectly functioning people, and oftentimes people that probably have unique strengths because of what's considered a disability, who are not given the opportunity and are probably missing out on a lot of extremely qualified and impactful people for that reason. And I think that, like you said, there are things like EFMP that are great for family members, but at the same time, it's unfortunate there's not a system that's similar for people who want to serve.
Absolutely. And they do have medical waivers and will make exceptions for certain things. But for the most part, like with my level of hearing loss, it'd be like an automatic disqualification just because, and I've had friends who've been like, fill out a medical waiver. But I'm like, but to like get to the point where I'd fill out all the information and then be denied would be really hard pill to swallow.
right, because you kind of have to make a lot of the plans that would coincide with that while you're in the process of actually applying. So I think that to make even just like that mental shift and prepare for something like that, that you, when you know the cards are so stacked against you, would probably be a little discouraging. At least, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences, not necessarily military related, but just as someone with moderate to severe hearing loss? I know you said that with hearing aids, you're, you know, that level sets everything pretty well, but generally speaking, how has your just life experience been?
Yeah. So it's, you know, really, like, I look at it like it doesn't impact my ability to do things. So like, I have been able to do things like run half marathons. I used to sing in choir. I was a piano player. I played in band. I was probably really loud trumpet player, but I played trumpet. And I guess I just, my parents, I have to give them a big credit because they never allowed me to, they never like made me feel like I was limited to things because mm-hmm. of my hearing loss. And I also had a sister too, who was high achieving as well. So I think that also pushed me to be like, okay, you know, like, and I think it was also a way to just prove to myself that I could do, you know, things that would necessarily not be the most easy, but just to be able to say, okay, you know, I was able to do this. My hearing loss, I will say, has affected me, especially like in social groups and conversation. You know, like if I'm in a large group, I'm like a lot less social just because there's so much background noise around. And, you know, I really have to be close to speakers to hear what they're saying. And like a restaurant is almost a nightmare for me, because if you're not like next to me or like across from me, it's hard to hear what everyone's saying. And I know it's that way for a lot of people, but I think the biggest time like I felt isolation or frustration is just when someone makes a joke and either I wasn't paying attention or I wasn't focusing on what was being said and I missed the joke and everybody's laughing and I'm like, I turn to somebody and ask like, what are they saying? And then they're like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, that's probably my biggest pet peeve. And a lot of people would say this who have hearing loss, is just that never mind, like people not willing to slow down and repeat themselves. Because I know I can talk fast. So sometimes, like, you know, I'll have to ask people to repeat themselves and they become frustrated if they have to say it more than twice sometimes. But it's like, I really do need that extra feedback. But for the most part, like, I've really always tried to see my disability as, I kind of mentioned earlier, like an ability to be able to connect to clients, to be able to empower others, to, you know, just be the best speech language pathologist that I can be, despite, you know, some additional difficulties that I have. But, you know, everyone has their own difficulties when it comes to their profession or their life. So I've never really let it stop me. Like, I mean, even though I can't hear when I'm underwater because I have to take my hearing aids out, I will say one advantage, and be it good or bad, I can sleep through almost anything. It has to be really significant loud noise to be able to wake up. So like, for example, the artillery at Fort Riley would wake me up because it'd be so loud. I lived in the town next over and I could still hear it. But yeah, it's living with hearing loss, like it can be really frustrating at times. And I think for me, like with COVID, even more, I've kind of realized some of my frustrations just with masks, because I never realized how much I relied on facial cues and reading mouths before COVID. And I think a lot of people are realizing this who even don't have hearing loss.
I agree.
And yeah, and I'm just like, I feel like I miss more, and with clients it's been tricky, but you know, it's just one of those things, like it's life right now and just doing our best to adapt and overcome with the circumstances. So
definitely. And I definitely agree. As someone who doesn't have any sort of struggle there, it's still very much something that you don't realize. Like you said, just if you're in a loud place or something, I don't realize how much I rely on that. Or again, like you said, the facial cues and stuff. So I can definitely relate to the fact that I didn't know how much I did that. And so I can only imagine how challenging it's been for you. But I think that the good news is that at least we do have this virtual world that we can all sort of live in for the time being. But at the same time, I know it's not the same. But I do think it's really very cool that you can relate to your, I'm sorry, would it be like a patient or a client? What would they be considered?
Yeah. So it just depends on setting. Medical is more like a patient. For me, being in a private practice, that I consider clients. If I was in a school, I'd be considering like my students. So it just varies within your setting. So
that makes sense. But yeah, absolutely. So either way, I think that, of course, I'm sure that there are moments when you're working through speech and language therapy that can be so frustrating. And so I think to have somebody teaching you who can relate to some of that has got to be very cool for the people that you're working with.
Yeah, I've had a couple of kids that I've worked with that have cochlear implants. And even though I don't have a cochlear implant, like I know those parents are just like, oh, you know, she lives with hearing loss, so she understands, you know, like what you're going through. Like it was really cool when I worked in the schools, the child that I worked with that had a cochlear implant, like I could work with their amplification system because it was similar to what I'd used when I was in school, and just also like bring them some information about deaf culture and talk about like some of their difficulties that they were having. So it was just kind of nice to be able to relate on that level.
That's really cool. What kind of advice do you have for people who don't deal with any sort of hearing loss? I know you mentioned one, which was extremely helpful for me to hear about just making sure that you slow down, having patience to potentially repeat something a couple times. What other advice do you have for someone to just support a friend who deals with something like that?
Yeah, like what's always been helpful for me is like, I don't want to say translator, but like if somebody who, you know, knows I may not catch everything and I ask them and they're like, oh yeah, this is what was said. Someone who's not going to be like, oh, like, you know, just kind of brush it off. One other big thing is that I encourage for people is take advantage of accommodations like captioning, you know, for the hearing community too. Like captioning can have a big benefit, and it's kind of fun to watch captioning because there's all sorts of little random noises that they put into captions, and it's kind of amusing. But for hearing people, like it can just kind of enrich their whole experience. And So I guess, yeah, my advice with that would be just to, you know, allow for those accommodations. And if someone needs to a certain seating arrangement or they need amplification, to just be understanding and willing to learn from the experience and willing to accommodate just to be able to fully include that individual, because their experience of, you know, like a presentation or something may be totally different than if they didn't have those accommodations in place.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really good to know. Thank you. What kind of advice do you have for those in the military or, you know, military spouses, children, et cetera, as far as seeking resources and therapies? I know you said that just a quick Google search doesn't bring up a whole lot. So is there anything that you suggest if somebody's sort of beginning that journey?
Yeah, so I've...
Aside from reaching out to you, of course.
Yeah, so I've actually been hearing this multiple times when I've talked to people for my own podcast, is a lot of, I'm not a parent myself, but I've heard more and more about the parent gut and intuition. So my encouragement for military spouses and family members, if they have a concern, to not wait, because the difference between waiting, you know, a few months versus waiting a year could be drastic. Say you throw a PCS in there, your child doesn't get the evaluation or the help they need, and they could be end up being behind in social development or speech language development. And really just to speak up and not be afraid to share information, especially if, you know, some providers are really great and willing to refer out. Others, it's a little more of a challenge sometimes. So for a parent to continue to advocate or say, like, I need a second opinion. And that's okay to say you need a second opinion, because I find more and more like a parent's gut is pretty accurate. And if there's concerns, that should at least give the parent the respect to listen to their concerns and to do an evaluation, you know, even if their child, it shows that they're highly functional and don't have any difficulties. But if you wait, on the other hand, you could have a totally different story. So that's my biggest advice, is not to be afraid to be that advocate for your child, to listen to that parent gut, and to seek the resources that you need. I always, you know, recommend to look into EFMP if you qualify for it, or also look for, you know, other individuals who may have gone through similar experiences. I know that's something I've seen recently, like there's not always a bunch of support groups for, you know, parents or individuals with certain disabilities, but there are some out there. To just be afraid, not to be afraid to ask questions and to seek help where needed.
Sure, that makes sense. And so the big question that everyone in the military is always debating, do you recommend, if you are working through this sort of thing and working through referrals on that kind of stuff, would you say TRICARE Prime or TRICARE Select?
Yeah, so that's a tricky question because Prime will pretty much want to link you to people in your area. Now, I will say from my experience, I decided to be TRICARE Select, but that was more because, not that there's not specialists who I could work with in this area, but being close to home and already having established care with a lot of providers, I wanted that freedom to be able to go to those providers who I've worked with for so long and know my case history and or how to work with my hearing aids and my technology and stuff. And I have a strong rapport and trust for them. So that for me, I think is a really hard thing to establish in the military community when you're moving so much. So I honestly would say for me personally, Select, because I was able to build a rapport. But a lot of times with like Select, like if you're wanting to get therapies, you have to pay a copay. So I definitely think Prime is good for, you know, individuals who are wanting to make sure their child gets services without that extra financial burden. But if you're really, you know, if you have a good rapport with a certain provider, or say you want to continue to work with a provider via teletherapy, if possible, which it's a lot of times sadly not possible because of licensure, but if they have a license where you're moving to, then if you can stay with that provider, that would be ideal for a child. But I think it's really up to the family and what they think will be work best for them.
Yeah, that's a lot of good stuff to take into account. And as a mom who's always trying to debate that sort of thing for my kiddos and the different resources that they need and people that they see, there, like you said, are obviously trade-offs to all of it. But I think that those are some really good ways of looking at the pros and cons of each, because sometimes it can feel overwhelming. But I think when you break it down, that's kind of what it comes down to, is who's near you and what are the costs, pretty much. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about like with providers, like I wish I could hold on to all my kiddos who PCS, but unfortunately right now with our licensure and how it's set up, but I would have to apply and pay for multiple licenses to be able to work in other states. Now they're hoping to have some sort of compacted license with multiple states where you would just get one license for multiple states and be able to practice, which would be great for military families. But unfortunately right now we don't have that in place, but hopefully in the future, we'll be able to find ways to provide more consistency to families, because I think that's something just with the military community in general, people struggle with so much, is just having consistency.
Right. And that's a really excellent point. And the side of that coin that I hadn't really thought about before, because I know from a military spouse employment perspective, there's a lot of focus on things like that and being able to keep your licensure as you move. But it's interesting to think about an opportunity to just have potentially like medical professionals who could have perhaps some sort of a certification where they could just continue, like you said, if you're working in a capacity where you're able to do something remote, that if you have a military patient that you could continue to see them as they moved, because I think that's not a side of it that I've ever really considered. And I wonder if there's much consideration around it in general.
Yeah, that's something we're working. Our governing body, ASHA, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, is working closely with states to get that to be a reality. You know, COVID kind of slowed some things down, but I know a lot of military spouses have been very vocal advocates for that. And I just, you know, I constantly in the back of my mind, I'm always wondering, like, you know, if a child has to move once or twice in a year, is that really good for their progress and their services to be able to be bouncing around like that? Or, you know, that's ultimately one of my big dreams and ambitions, is to be able to continue to see clients through military PCS and deployments and moves and all the crazy stuff that military life brings to them. Like, I think about deployment because, you know, multiple families will go move to their parent who is stateside's home of origin. Well, if they move, you can't necessarily see them if they're in another state that you're not licensed in. So,
right. I think that's such a great point. Like, deployments or during a PCS when, you know, like for us, we have prime. So the time it takes to get into your primary care provider and then get the referral and then get into the next person, that, you know, even if it's not somebody, like, again, my kiddos are young, so virtual things can be sometimes more of a challenge than they're worth. But at the same time, to have the continuity to hop on and see that familiar face and have essentially something instead of nothing would be wonderful. So I think that's exciting to me that at least in certain avenues, there are people that are working on something like that, because I think there's definitely a need. I know that you are a pretty fresh new military spouse, but you've also, you know, been around it for a while. Can you tell me what you've learned about yourself since becoming a military spouse?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things that I've learned about is flexibility. So, you know, things are always changing here on our local post. Regulations are always changing. I mean, we had to postpone our wedding, you know, we had to push back when we were going to have a potential honeymoon. So just being flexible. And I've also learned that I really like want a lot of connections. So even way before I became a military spouse, like being involved in the USO and Team Red, White, and Blue and some of those organizations, like I really found a way to connect with the military community and people who have been, like veterans and other individuals who have been a part of the military, just because I am able to connect and to be able to relate. And I have realized that I'm actually a pretty extroverted person, despite my hearing loss, because I like to talk to people and hear their stories and meet new people. Like, that's something I love to do. And, you know, being a military spouse, even in the short few months, like I just see on the spouse page, there's always someone else who is reaching out and trying to find someone. And I always feel for them because I just want to be like, okay. And a lot of times I do will reach out to them and be like, okay, like, you know, I know you're in a new place, but like, here is this group or there's this and to get involved in, like, even with COVID, like being able to find ways to be involved in the community has been like a big thing for me. Like, you know, and always having the USO has been a big, big thing for me. And we're finally reopening our center here tomorrow. We reopened this week and I get to go back tomorrow for the first time on our center on Pulse. So that'll be exciting. But just, yeah, I've really learned that I have a passion to connect with others and also have a passion to serve others within this community, whether it's through speech therapy services or if it's through, you know, organizations I'm involved in or just being a spouse to talk to if someone, you know, needs that connection.
And it's funny because I'm not an extroverted person by nature, but at the same time, I feel like 2020 has made everybody at least on the very precipice of becoming an extrovert, because we're all just so ready for that community and that conversation. And we moved to our current base during the pandemic. So it's a really wonderful community of people, most of whom I've only met virtually at this point. And I'm just so ready to see people and talk to people and connect and, you know, all the things that you're talking about. I feel like the good news for extroverts is that even the introverts are ready to chat at this point. So I know, again, you're new to it, but even so, I feel like you've been able to get, it sounds like from what you've already learned, a good feel for some of the adjustments that it takes and some of the positives as well. But if you could choose the military spouse life, or if you could, you know, of course, still be married, all that good stuff, but your husband did something that kept you in one place, what would you rather do?
You know, honestly, I would, and I've had a lot of time to think about this because being on the fringes of the community for so long, I always knew that there was a chance. And people used to joke with me. They're like, oh, are you like, when are you going to meet your military husband? I'm like, and constantly was asked if people didn't know me, if I was a spouse. So I think, or a service member. So I think I just kind of knew that it would probably happen at some point. I didn't know when, but I would choose it. I know it's stressful. And like my husband was quarantined a week after we got married. And then he was quarantined for 2 weeks on post. And I wasn't able to like stay with him or be, you know, really around him. So that was tough. But like, I think of all the people who've done deployments and a lot longer time apart. And I guess for me, like, I like to be able to do my own activities and be involved. So I stay busy. And that would be my biggest advice for mil spouses, seasoned or new, just staying busy and finding things you're passionate about. I have the space to do that. I want my husband home more, yes, but I also like just the adventure and the people that I've met. Like, I've met somebody from Senegal when I was at the USO at Fort Riley. I've met people from Australia, like all parts of the world and the country. And it was just been so cool. And getting to know people's stories and how they got to where they are has been just such an amazing ride. And I love to travel. So actually, that was partly for me why when I heard we were going to get stationed here, I was like, really? Missouri? I'm like, we bounced between Kansas, Missouri, Colorado for the last, like, my husband stayed in this like same 3-state radius. And I'm like, yeah. I'm ready to get out of the Midwest.
I get that. We've been all over the country, but thus far we have not been stationed outside the country. And based on my husband's career right now, the odds are generally just kind of becoming less and less likely, I think. And it's like, oh, wow, really? Like, are we going to stay here the whole time? Like, I would definitely miss family if we did. But at the same time, I think when you're at the beginning of it all, you're like, oh, we're going to go all over the world and do all these different things. And again, we were lucky to have seen a lot of really awesome parts of the country, but it is kind of surprising sometimes when you end up not going quite as far as you thought you might.
Yeah. And yeah, I just have a sense of adventure and meeting new people and going new places. And that's something for me. Like, when I got here, I was like trying to explore what was around and figure out what was going on in this area. And a lot of people look at our area and there's like, there's nothing to do. And I'm like, there's actually a lot to do if you drive a little bit or you walk in a certain area. Like, I just have been able to, even, you know, I laugh even at Fort Carson. I walked into their USO and was like, hey, can I volunteer? And they're like, sure. And I was able to do that even without like my husband being there. I think being in the military community has given me confidence and just love of the community to be able to just walk in a place like that and connect with people. So
sure. Yeah. It definitely teaches you how to just do things on your own, because I'm totally the kind of person who would always rather have a buddy, but at the same time, this lifestyle gets you comfortable just, like you said, walking in by yourself and asking for what you want and making it happen. Okay, next portion is going to be our rapid fire portion. Totally breezy. Just a couple fun questions. First thing that comes to mind. Ready?
All right. Yep.
Okay. Favorite junk food?
Lately, probably chocolate.
Favorite book?
Wow. This is funny that you asked me that, because I have started a book group here at Fort Leonard Wood. So favorite book? Oh, I will say I have a soft spot for Nicholas Sparks books.
That's fair. I did for the longest time. I feel like there was a couple I read like in a row that all were, you know, obviously he's kind of has a standard storyline, but some of them were a little different, but I hit like 3 in a row that were just like, you know, that exact same storyline that I was like, all right, I'll come back to you in a little bit.
Oh yeah.
What are you reading right now?
I am actually reading three books. So I'm reading When the Crawdads Sing. I'm reading The Girl He Left Behind. And I'm also reading A Path, I think, to the Heart for my yoga teacher training.
Cool. Oh, that's awesome that you're doing yoga teaching. Crawdads is really good. I haven't read the other two, but Crawdads it's a good one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It gets a little slow, but it gets better. In my opinion, it got a little slow at one point. There's a lot of swamp talk, but what's your favorite guilty pleasure?
Oh, easily like reality TV shows. Like one that me and my husband both enjoy watching is 90 Day Fiance, just because we're always like, where did they come up with these people?
That's great. My sister is the queen of reality TV. I keep up with a few. Like I'm a sucker for The Bachelor and stuff, but she just sent me in. She's so excited because I guess the new season of Sister Wives is coming out. Mm-hmm. But she keeps me up to date on all the craziness. Tell me one word to describe yourself.
I'd say strong.
And one word to describe your spouse.
I would say hardworking.
Excellent. And lastly, will you leave us with your favorite quote?
Yeah, I was trying to think of a quote and it's hard to pinpoint one, but one that I kind of pinned a while ago and it's stuck with me for a long time, is failure is only failure if you let it be, because there's things in life that you may not do well and you may fail at. You know, people fail, you know, through their degrees, they may fail, you know, within the military, they may fail just at certain times, and you can let failure beat you up and you can let it like haunt you for a long time, or you can take it and make it into a new opportunity and find a way out of a rut and make it a positive experience.
Thanks again so much to Courtney for sharing your insights with us. Don't forget to keep up with both of us on social media at HOH Speechy and The American Mill Spouse. Have a great week!